Hey, hi! Welcome to Someone Else's Movie, the podcast where an actor, writer, director, or nebulous industry figure gives a little love to a movie they didn't make. I'm Norm Wilner, senior film writer for Now Magazine, and this is the other thing I do. In fact, this is the other thing I've done for 150 episodes, which is just nuts. And my guest for this very special show is Paul Scheer, a writer, actor, producer, director, and podcast superhero who's been on just about everything worth watching in the last 10 years. From the Upright Citizens Brigade and Human Giant sketch shows through 30 Rock and Parks and Rec and Happy Endings and Veep, he's a stealth genius on The League and Burning Love, and if you've never seen his brilliant Adult Swim series NTSF SDSUV, you should get on that right now. He also turns up this week in James Franco's The Disaster Artist, playing Rafael Smaja, one of Tommy Wiseau's cinematographers on The Room, which, for one of the hosts of How Did This Get Made, is just about perfect casting. Paul picked Bowfinger, a 1999 comedy directed by Frank Oz and written by and starring Steve Martin. He plays a desperate would-be filmmaker going to increasingly insane lengths to shoot a half-baked alien invasion thriller, Chubby Rain. He cuts corners on locations and effects, he risks the wrath of a Hollywood cult leader, and he ultimately hangs his entire movie on footage of a star who hasn't actually agreed to be in it. Eddie Murphy plays both the A-lister Kit Ramsey and his lookalike brother, Jif, and the cast is packed with ringers doing pitch-perfect work in key supporting roles. Robert Downey Jr.'s in there, and Terrence Stamp, and Christine Baranski, and Heather Graham. It's solid. It's actually aged really well, all things considered. I should also apologize. This is the shortest episode I've ever released. Paul was only available for a tiny window in the middle of the Disaster Artist press day at TIFF. We knew he didn't have a lot of time, so we hid out in a tiny room and talked really quickly. I think you'll get your money's worth, and I had a ball. This is Someone Else's Movie.
You know, Bowfinger to me is one of my favorite comedies, similarly to The Disaster Artist,
yeah,
which
no
we're
kidding.
Here. It's like, it's about people trying to make a good movie and not making one. But for me, I love Eddie Murphy and I love Steve Martin. Having them together, it just, the movie really pops, and it's a movie that I don't think many people know about.
Yeah, it went right under the radar at the time. I mean,
yeah.
I remember, I think it opened in August or something. It was a really weird window.
And the poster's pretty terrible.
Yeah.
But it's one of those movies that I'm always trying to show people, because I think there's a group of people who view Eddie Murphy as like the daddy daycare kind of person. I grew up with Eddie Murphy as the 48 Hours, Beverly Hills Cop, like, you know, one of the funniest people out there, and I love Steve Martin too, and I think this movie kind of showcases both of them at what they do best, and it's so odd that it didn't get any traction. These are huge movie stars, and it's like, and Heather Graham is fantastic in it, and Jamie Kennedy. It's a great, like, it's a great cast and a hilarious premise. Eddie Murphy's character is like in this Scientology kind of organization, mind head.
Yeah.
That like Terrence Stamp is the like running, which I, you know, so it's like taking down Scientology like way early on, and Steve Martin's like this kind of failed like dinner theater actor who, you know, reads this script called Chubby Rain, which, you know, he's fully believing in, and it's about making a movie. It's so funny that as we're talking about it, I'm like, oh yeah, the similarities to Disaster Artist
totally, yeah,
are gigantic. I mean, the big caveat here is that they can't get Eddie Murphy to be in their movie, so they get the guy who looks just like Eddie Murphy, played by Eddie Murphy, to be in the movie.
The other parallel that struck me is that you have someone who I think could best be described as a completely untrained actor becoming the star of a film.
Yeah, exactly,
and,
yeah.
Except unwittingly.
Right,
and
exactly.
That adds another level of, I mean, almost prop comedy, where Eddie Murphy is the prop, and they're just working around, and they're shooting clandestinely. They have
yeah.
to replace him with
and,
his twin.
And you know, like I feel like, you know, again, Eddie Murphy, if you're, there are people out there, not me, that will slight him for being, oh, he does all these da-da-da-da-da, but it's like, his character work is amazing. When you
yeah.
watch that dinner table scene from Nutty Professor, you're blown away by it. And I think in a weird way that this character is so subtle and great. Like, he plays like, I think, the 80s version of Eddie Murphy, like, that kind of crazy guy, like, who may or may not have had a gun. I mean, this character in this movie has a gun and is, like, firing it off a, like, drum kit. And then, you know, and then you have the simple version. Like, I'm constantly, I'm blown away by the fact that no one has seen it.
Yeah, I was trying to explain it to people, and they thought I'd made it up. It was actually, that isn't even a title.
I know, Bowfinger is a weird title. And it's, again, it's like, you know, so much goes into a movie, right? And it's sort of, that is a good movie with a good script, with great actors, directed by Frank Oz, you know? And then it's like a bad title, crappy poster, and it's forgotten about, you know? And but it's great to be able to talk about these things because, you know, we all have those movies that we want to show everybody. And, you know, and I feel like when you do stumble upon something so good, it's like a little secret. It's like you bust it out of your, you know, your cabinet of your DVDs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a talisman. Right?
Yes.
Like you end up saying, you, I can't respect you if you haven't seen. So yeah. What was your first experience? Did you see it theatrically?
I saw it in the theater. I mean, as a fan of those guys, I was into seeing it.
Did it play for everybody?
Great. I mean, it's a good movie. So it wasn't kind of marketed the best way, but it's one of those movies that I quote all the time and I use as like a litmus test for like when you're dating someone. Like that's, you know, it's like, do you like this? Like, check this out. Or did you know about this? And then it's a small club of people who don't know about it, you know, people who know about it, it's really great. And I love, as I've kind of, you know, Googled around and found stuff, it has a great backstory because Steve Martin wrote this.
Yeah.
And Heather Graham is playing essentially, I'm forgetting her name, dated.
Oh, version of Anne Heche.
Anne Heche, right. Yeah. And so that's kind of fun. And Steve Martin, it's just like Steve Martin's, like, sense of humor throughout. Like, again, taking down Scientology, taking down Anne Heche, taking down, like, this idea of Hollywood celebrity. It's a biting kind of satire, you know, and I think Steve Martin obviously is an amazing writer, and I think he's done more serious stuff recently.
Yeah, he's
sort
of shifted as a writer. It's been interesting to watch the transition because the stuff that he seems to be most personally invested in, like this or L.A. Story or Roxanne, is still like one of the great comedy scripts
ever
written because it's based on Cyrano, but his update is just flawless. To watch him as a writer then seed the best lines, the best jokes to Murphy. I mean, I still, like, the Heavenly God sequence is still just running across the freeway. Yes, they added the cars digitally, but it doesn't matter. You're so into that by that point, and Martin isn't even playing to it. He's a spectator.
Well, you know, I think Steve Martin has, like, a couple different modes, right? Like, where it's, like, you know, there's serious Steve Martin, then there's, like, the dad Steve Martin, and the father of the bride-esque, which is great. I like all these Steve Martins. And this movie, he errs on that side of that goofier Steve Martin a little bit, which I really love. Like, he has, like, the ponytail that's Velcroed on his head, and, you know, and he is doing some more physical stuff. And I think I like seeing that Steve Martin that's, like, fully in his body. Like, you know, where he's, like, kind of just, like, oh, you know. And, like, and I do think you're right. Like, he gives Eddie Murphy a lot, and he plays straight man to Eddie Murphy. But I also think he plays really kind of goofy and big. I mean, the thing about this movie, and I love it in the sense that the beginning of the movie starts out, his goal is one day the UPS truck or the FedEx truck is going to come to my house with an important package. Like, that to him is success.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets it at the end, but that's, you know, it's like, so he is playing this, like, dreamer, you know, maybe a slightly smarter version of Nathan Johnson from, like, The Jerk, you know. But I like, it's a rare even version of Steve Martin where he is, you know, just really loose. But you're right. And Eddie Murphy is in this thing where, you know, just, again, we're showing his versatility. I feel like everyone gets to, like, everyone's playing to their full strength at their height of their power in a weird way.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never hear people talk about it either. Like, even Eddie Murphy or Steve Martin talk about it.
Yeah, well, Martin's just sort of seeded the ground completely to theater these days.
Yeah.
He's not making movies anymore or not as much.
Well, he performs now with Martin Short a lot. Like, they do like these two-man shows, which are supposedly fantastic, you know, silly and goofy. But I was listening to someone talk and said, like, you know, Steve Martin needs someone like Martin Short in his life because he takes the piss out of Steve. And I think when he takes the piss out of Steve, Steve becomes the Steve the Martin that we know and love,
you know?
Because I always think that version of Steve Martin is there. I grew up, like, listening to his albums. My dad, I had Cruel Shoes. I love Cruel Shoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, but even back in the day, like, he released an album and
Steve
Martin Brothers. Like, and one side was a serious banjo playing and the other side was stand-up comedy. And so he's always, like, I think, wrestling with both of those sides. Mm-hmm. And, Yeah, and you know, and I hope I'm very excited to see this show that he's doing on Broadway with Amy Schumer right now, because I'm like, oh, that will be, what version of Steve will that be? Because you know, I've read Shop Girl, and I read his book, and you know, he is a quieter guy. He's an art collector, and he, you know, it's like, it's interesting to make that kind of transition, but he's made a transition where he's still producing good work. It's just sometimes not. You want to see that old, you know, yeah, you want to see that old thing, yeah.
He's doing what he wants to do, and, you know, any artist should be not 100% only allowed but encouraged. But, yeah, I mean, I've met him, I interviewed him on the House Sitter Junket.
Oh, yeah,
in Boston,
of course, yeah.
Which is the only time I've ever met him, and it was a really fascinating tension between me, him, and the five other people in the room who really wanted him to be on.
Right.
And he was talking about, like, because House Sitter is ultimately a film about stalking.
Yeah.
He was talking about how, well, you know, once you get your first letter dipped in blood, which I've received. And they were laughing. He's like, no, this isn't a bit.
Yeah.
This really happened. And watching him be uncomfortable talking to people is something I've never forgotten, because his, like, he's built like a dancer. He's 6'2 or 6'3 and muscular, and he was just shifting uncomfortably in an unconscious way.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever seen him do anything like that on screen, unconsciously, because everything he does is considered.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when you mention what he does in Bowfinger, you're absolutely right. There is a performance there.
Yeah, he is, you know, he is, I mean, from his stand-up days, an incredibly physical kind of performer. And
did you ever see the special where he dances with Gregory Hines?
No.
Oh, it's amazing. Chef Factory released a box set of his stuff that Broadway Video produced back in the
70s. Oh, I got it. I feel like
phenomenal.
I may have this, and I don't know how I
it's in there.
Missed. Okay, yeah. I get, like, I have the Mel Brooks one, and I do have that Steve Martin one. Yes. I got to watch that.
Oh, no, it's incredible.
Okay,
just
that
they match each other perfectly, and, you know, and he's Pennies from Heaven around the same
time,
so he's fully trained and limber.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to me, Steve Martin feels like a guy who gets bored. Which is a good thing to be. It's like, I don't want to do that again. Like, when he did L.A. Story, it's like, oh, you could have seen him make 4 Woody Allen-esque films about L.A., and they would have probably been all interesting and all, you know.
Yeah.
And, but in a way, Bowfinger is, it's not as, like, Woody Allen as, like, L.A. Story is. And L.A. Story was very Steve Martin, too, but it's like, he could have.
It's more lyrical, it's more thoughtful.
Yeah.
No, but I was going to say, Bowfinger is a snapshot of Hollywood in 1997, 98, when he was trying to get it made, I think, because you can feel his frustration with the Minehead stuff, but the rest of the industry, like, even fixating on FedEx, which, you know, they're going to start emailing scripts in a week.
Of course, but it's like, you know, and I think it's getting the mindset of people who we all, like, no matter what you're doing, there's all these goals that you want. And if you were to tell your goal to someone else, they'd be like, well, it's nothing as important as it is to you. And I think like that FedEx thing is like one of those things. It's like you just want it to feel important. Like, and that's really, you know, that's what it recommend, you know, like what it represented. Like a guy who just trying to just get success. And, you know, and in the end it's pretty damn goofy, like where like him and this bizarro Eddie Murphy are like in this kung fu movie, and you know, which again is, but that's a kind of classic Steve Martin too, you know, the end, you know, like, but it's like that's all he wants. He, like, if it's the number one movie in China, he doesn't make a difference. He just wants people to acknowledge him and be acknowledged. And he was also, you know, Christie Bransky is amazing in that movie too.
Yeah.
She's like you know, just helping misfits kind of find their place.
Yeah, there's a sweetness to it that in my mind puts it to the Steve Martin canon.
Yes.
He's the writer who loves all his characters and wants them to succeed, even though he is deliberately stacking the odds against them
as the
writer, right?
Like, yeah, and he is, you know, I guess, you know, it's interesting because I always think, I mean, Mixed Nuts was Nora Ephron, but that has another kind of, I mean, he picks interesting movies, you know, and it's you're like,
the year before he made The Spanish Prisoner with Mamet.
Oh, right.
Which nobody remembers either.
Yeah,
right?
Right,
there's this weird dip in the late 90s where stuff just kind of fell away because it wasn't released on DVD immediately or something.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a weird time in film because maybe that was a time where, I mean, you know, hindsight's like kind of 2020, but like where it's like I wonder, like, maybe the Spanish Prisoner was indie, but indie wasn't like it yet. You know, it wasn't like, you know, it was like, I feel like Pulp Fiction really was like, or, you know, like Reservoir Dogs kind of was like, oh, did you see this movie? And then Pulp Fiction kind of exploded in a big way. And that was like, these are indie films. And that kind of, or at least in my mind, and maybe I came up younger. So like, then it was like, I had this explosion of, you know, Greg Araki and Doom Generation and these movies that you wouldn't, whoa, what is this? And what is that? You know, and like, and Kids and all that kind of stuff, you know, just sort of opened this door to this other world. And those movies were kind of a little bit before their time in a way, but not as mainstream. Like, I don't think Bowfinger is as mainstream as House Sitter,
right?
You know, even though it's super funny, you know, it's like,
it's too weird. I mean, it really is. And that's why it's a precious jewel now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we're about to get called for time because we're in a tiny little window, but the closer on the show is usually the same, which is there anything from Bowfinger that you've appropriated or borrowed or stolen into your own work?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's an interesting. Let me just like
have you,
to give you.
Have you muttered "Heavenly God, Heavenly God"?
You know, I think. I'm just trying to think of like. I'd like to give you a good answer. Yeah, so you can cut all the stuff out.
Yeah, no, take your time.
I think the thing that I love about Bowfinger that subconsciously infects the stuff that I like to do is ensemble, like the power of ensemble. And we talked about it a little bit earlier, the idea that Steve Martin's like ceding his lines to Eddie Murphy. And I think when you build a really good ensemble, it's functioning as one organism. Mm-hmm. And so in the things that I've gotten to create and be a part of, like The League was one. The League was a thing where we would pitch lines for each other, which is a very rare thing. Like, you know, where it's like, oh, this wouldn't be good for me, you say that, or how about I say that and you say this. And when I did NTSF, just creating a cast of really diverse performers and knowing that each one of them is going to bring something great. Like, we had Kate Mulgrew and Karen Gillan and Martin Starr and June Diane Raphael and, you know, all these people who are individual powerhouses. And if you bring them under one roof and you give them the freedom to bring their own thing to it, you can get something really special out of it and something that feels unique. And I think that, like, subconsciously, that movie, when you look at that cast, I would argue it's the best that Jamie Kennedy is in a movie. I would say that it plays to Eddie Murphy's strengths and also subtlety and in a big performance. I think Steve Martin plays straight man and crazy guy. Even Robert Downey Jr. is great in that film.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there are some really fantastic performances and it just really well cast. So good casting and great ensemble, I think, is one thing that I think that why I looked at that movie and why it lasts and why it's fun to watch now, because it's just fully greatly cast.
Yeah. And it's just come out on Blu-ray.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's a Best Buy exclusive right now, but it's going to be released everywhere in October.
That's amazing.
So,
okay,
just going to stop and like buy a box.
I should. Well, yeah, I should. I it was so rare because it was finally out on iTunes. Like, I couldn't get it for a while. I only had a DVD of it. Oh, that's great. That's on Blu-ray. Oh, good for it. Oh, timely that I picked it.
Yeah, nice choice.
All right, great.
My thanks to Paul Scheer, who you can see in James Franco's The Disaster Artist this Friday, December 1st, in select theaters in the U.S. and Canada. It goes wider December 8th. And thanks also to Kate Parks and Brianna Hurley. They know what they did. You can find Paul on Twitter at Paul Scheer, all one word, PaulScheer. And you can find Bowfinger on Blu-ray and DVD from Universal Studios Home Entertainment for like $10. It's also available on iTunes and Google Play. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Norm Wilner and elsewhere on the internet at NowToronto.com. You can also find this podcast on Twitter at Semcast, S-E-M-Cast, and on the web at SomeoneElsesMovie.com. If you feel like leaving a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever, that would be greatly appreciated. The other guy's still doing his dumb thing, and it would be nice to remind him that we were here first. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening.